Excellent. So thank you everybody for joining us. Today we have, this is the member prospect call, and we have Ted Euler and Judy McNary with us today. And Ted has been a member at ACA since 2000. He's a licensed attorney in Michigan and has been a licensed attorney since 1979. And he actually started out as an ACA client. And then I'll let Ted explain a little bit more about his background when he's up. And we also have Judy joining us. And she has been a member. Judy, you're going to have to help me out here. I don't know how long you've been a member here. I want to say 3 or 4 years.
2007.
Oh, my gosh. So a lot longer than I thought. Sorry. And she co-founded two software companies. She brings a wealth of business expertise to ACA and recently is a star of an online reality show for financial advisors, which is really cool. And I can go ahead and send a link to everybody after the call if you're interested in checking it out. And Judy, you can give a little bit more background about yourself and what brought you to ACA. We have on the line, and we may have others on here, and don't feel pressure to bring up your name if you don't feel like it. We have Chris, Cecilia, Doug, Harlan. Am I missing anybody? Excellent. And one of you had asked about muting your phone. I'd like this to be as interactive as possible. So please, Ted, if you want to go ahead and jump on first, have at it.
Thanks, Kim. Over the years, as I have talked to prospective members, people were always looking for some little thread of connection, like, well, if he could do it, I could do it, or if, you know, with his background, if that's close enough to my background. We're always looking for little ways to identify. So this is my spiel. I have been an attorney for a long time. I did not always practice law. The times that I did practice law, I was frustrated by the way that we had to get paid, which was by the hour or the quarter hour. It felt like I was never being paid for what I knew, and I wasn't rewarded for helping people stay out of trouble. We were really rewarded for people calling us real late in the process, and it always felt like I was not really in a good position to help people. Some of you might have heard of Burt Whitehead. I hope you all get to know him at some point. He is the original Henry Ford of ACA, and my wife and I were living in the Detroit area, and through a couple of channels, we got to know him and hired him as our financial advisor about 20 years ago. And after a while, he wanted to start training advisors, and he said, Ted, you really should come and take my training. He had me meet some people from the very first class. I, of course, never wanted advice from other people, so I ignored him and moved away from Detroit when my wife and I decided we wanted to, you know, kind of reinvent ourselves in a smaller, in the area where we'd grown up. We got away from the big city. And then I called Bert up, and I said, okay, now I'm ready. And I have been an advisor for 11 years. I work in a, and this is another thread that maybe some of you can grab a hold of. I work in a very small town. I work in a town, it's two towns that straddle a river in western Michigan, right on Lake Michigan. The total year-round population here is about 3,000. And I am able to make a decent living in a small town. So the size of the town is not as important as, in fact, it's maybe in a smaller town, smaller area, you are more marketable. It's easier to get to know people. You can be, you can separate yourself from the crowd. So that's my spiel, Kim.
Is that my cue, Ted?
Hello.
Hello. I'm sorry. Hello. Am I still here? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Can you hear
Judy,
me? This is Doug.
Like, at this point, I thought, Judy, maybe you want to go ahead, and then we can open it up for Q&A.
Yeah, Sounds good.
Okay.
I as Kim mentioned, I joined ACA in 2007. My career had been in the high-tech industry for a long time, and it included, I worked in startups, and then I actually started up and sold a couple of my own, and I was semi-retired and kind of raising kids and stuff, and really had always been interested in financial planning and had a bad experience with an advisor, and so I went back to school to get a master's in financial planning from the College for Financial Planning and finished that and in 2006 and then was then wanted to open my own practice. So I have what we call a lifestyle practice. So I it's worked out really well for me. I have a lot of time off, and I have a lot of time where I work really hard. And I was looking for a way to work with people that I felt did not have the conflicts of interest that I had seen in other, as a client in other situations, and kind of stumbled across ACA while I was at NAPFA. I had the good fortune of signing up for a conference buddy at NAPFA, and my buddy was Jill Gianola, and so she explained to me about this organization, ACA, and it was exactly what I was looking for. So I signed right up and went through training and haven't looked back. It's been great. I have really awesome clients, and I really enjoy it. And the organization has been so supportive throughout. There's just so much knowledge that it's been a great decision. So that's my story.
So one of the most common questions I get, did the two of you, Judy and Ted, did you guys start out with clients, or did you start from scratch and had to get all of the clients that you have now?
I say nobody starts out with no clients because you have to start out with yourself. So, I didn't have any clients other than kind of the eating my own dog food theory and becoming my own client to start. So unlike Ted, I didn't have a Cambridge advisor beforehand, but no, I didn't have any, so I had to get them.
Mm-hmm.
The first year was, and there's still a lot of learning, I think. The first year it was where I would just take anybody that seemed like would want to be a client, and then now I'm at the point where I really know what I like to work with and who I like to work with and the kinds of issues I like to help people through, and I've gotten so I'm a lot more selective about who I work with.
When I started, I was living in a small town, and I had been helping friends manage a very successful restaurant. I was getting that one last gasp of being a kid out of my system, working goofy hours and working when other people were having fun, and that wasn't satisfying. So I decided to do this work and started talking about it to people, and I had been doing some legal work, some freestanding legal works, some estate planning, helping some people with real estate, traffic tickets, landlord-tenant things. It was almost for fun, and I started telling people, this is what I'm going to be doing. I sent a letter to all of my friends the week after I was in, I came back from the training class, and I was also interning in Detroit at the mothership learning how to do tax returns, and people started calling me. My wife's best friend found out what I was doing, and she wanted to hire me, and I actually said no because I was commuting back and forth to Detroit. It was a 3-hour drive each way, and she imposed her will upon me and said, I really want help now. So I had a client before I really wanted clients. She referred her boss, who referred a couple other members of their church, and I still represent all of those people except my original client, who has since moved to Portland. And that was with my help. She needed to do a career change, and so I helped her do that. So I started out with zero, started signing people up, sent a letter out to everybody I knew, this is what I'm doing, and people started showing up. So I started from zero, kind of like what Judy was saying. But I did have some credibility as a lawyer, and there are people who still feel like that is a strength of mine. I don't quarrel with them. I let them think whatever they want to think as long as they're somebody I want to work with. That's it, Kim.
Excellent. Does anybody have any questions?
I guess I have two. This is Doug, Connecticut. I'd say I'm not sure for whom, but maybe for both Ted and Judy. The if I'm calling it properly, the value analysis that I believe is part of the Cambridge process, is that well received? In other words, do you have any difficulty justifying your value to your clients? And first of all, do you go through a formal value analysis, if I'm calling it right, process at the end of the yearly engagement to show how much value you've brought? Is that part of your normal routine? And secondly, how well is that received? Do your customers, but generally your clients generally walk away feeling satisfied?
In the initial getting to know you phase that I do with clients, and keep in mind that after a while, there are very few cold clients. I have had almost all of my business by referral, and I don't advertise. I write columns that are published in a paper, and now I'm doing it on Facebook, and I'm getting some response to that. But most people come for a very particular reason, it's my job to figure out what that is. And once they get some comfort, they acquire some comfort that I can help them in that area, the process literally sells itself. One of the Cambridge tools in our toolkit is essentially you're calling it a value analysis. That's a fine phrase, where I look at tax returns. I know how much, or I can guesstimate how much they're spending on their investments, and I can show them how I can, in life insurance, I can show them fees I can save them.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about, huh?
Yeah, and that's a tool that I do use. I have found, frankly, the older I get, the more I'm doing this, the less I need to do that. Because, again, when people come from a referral, they're already sold.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a scripted process that I can whip out if I need to. And it's been my experience. I used to sort of struggle with how do I demonstrate value in the second and third and fourth year. What I have learned, and this may sound a little like an alien tongue to you right now, is if they don't see the value, I can't prove it to them.
Mm-hmm.
That it has to come from them.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And now the people who are more prone to use spreadsheets among us really do want to quantify that, and I understand. And I've had clients who want a little more evidence. But I have also become comfortable enough to say to them, if you don't see the value, then don't renew with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets them every time. oh, no, that's not what I meant. How much is your renewal fee? So does that comport with what you've experienced, Judy?
I would say, since I'm only, let's see, 2.5 years in to having my practice off and running, or three, I guess I'm three and, what am I? I don't know. I haven't been at it as long as you. And so I will say that I've had turnover that I don't mind in a certain group, because there were certain kinds of people that I thought I could help and thought would see the ongoing value. And, in fact, they came because they were in a really serious critical situation, you know, mostly like too much debt. And I sort of looked at them and thought, well, as soon as we, you know, if they had really high incomes and stuff, that we get the debt, we get a plan for that, then we can focus on building their net worth and showing the continued value. And what I found in a number of cases, just granted it's a small data set, but was that as soon as we got the debt cleaned up, then suddenly the value of the rest of the financial planning wasn't as critical to them. And their real goal was to get out of pain, and they had gotten themselves in a bad place with their finances, and so they didn't see the long-term value. So that group I've kind of learned, that's one of the groups I've learned, I try and screen better now, so I don't get those. So the people that I find I have the most success with, and the ones that are just delighted to be renewing and get it and get the value, are the ones either, like Ted said, that are the referrals, or the ones that have come that have maybe had a bad experience or a suspicious experience with a different financial advisory thing. So, for example, I see some really horrendous Edward Jones portfolios, and people, after a while, you know, if they're coming because they don't think that they've got an appropriate set of things in terms of investments and they've got it with Edward Jones and they've just been handed off to a new broker there, that's an opportunity to go in and show the value of the overall comprehensive financial planning, and those people end up being delighted and thrilled, and they see the value because you can compare what it was costing them there versus what it's costing them through the ACA program, and they're very happy. You know, same with Smith Barney, some of the other ones where there's been there's a lot of different fees, and when you point those out to people, it is easy. That really helps.
Hi, this is Cecilia, and I have a more general question, if that's okay. It would be helpful to just have like a high level overview from your perspective on what you think the program really brings as a differentiator, as opposed to, because you know there are other programs out there that kind of claim to do similar things. So what is it that's different about this group?
Go ahead, Judy.
Can you give me a couple of the other programs you're thinking of so I can compare?
So one would be Veritouch. There's another one who I'm drawing a blank on, but they're basically networks of financial planners that are basically running a set program, and they're mostly kind of fee only, conflict of interest free.
Okay, I'm personally not familiar with those, so I can just tell you what I like about the way this program works. Obviously there's more than one way to help people. What I like is that the training that you get through this program gives you I felt like the training actually kind of saved me a year of ramp up on my business, because it really just gave me a good foundation for how to deal with things, how to go find the people, how to work with them once you find them, all that kind of stuff. In an ongoing sense, it's a pretty unusual group in that there's a lot of sharing of knowledge and information that is just incredibly helpful. So you can have a cry for help out at 11 o'clock at night kind of a thing, and someone will have expertise in whatever obscure topic it is, and we'll weigh in and give, and you'll get some responses on the forum that can help you move forward. For example, early on I had somebody had a portfolio with some closed-end funds in it, and I really wanted to understand how to position things better, what the strengths and weaknesses of those closed-end funds might have been, and I posted a question on the forum, and turns out there was an advisor in another state who used to work for a company, and he said, call me, I can walk you through it, and I called and spent 45 minutes just explaining the pros and cons and evaluating the specific ones, and really gave me some excellent information that I could then go and discuss with the client, and it was really helpful. So that the amount of knowledge in all these different areas has been really tremendous.
And it, I think Judy's addressed the, you know, what comes after. Let me talk maybe about the training. And this is without any, I never looked at anything else. This is what I knew. This is, you know, this was what was in front of me. So I just grabbed a hold. But what I got from this is I could do a lot of the stuff. I could have taken an H&R Block tax course and learned the way they do taxes. And I could have studied to become to get a license to be a broker, and I could have made money doing those things. But that never occurred to me. What I always wanted to do is I was, even as a lawyer, I was enough of a social worker to really want to help people in all areas. And way too often I felt like I was asked, could you just answer this question for me? And I couldn't answer that question because so much of the response impacted other parts of a client's life. And what I learned in ACA and am able to do every day of my life is when a client comes in to see me, whether, you know, maybe a tax appointment, but during the course of it, my mother is dying. I have her. I'm supposed to help take care of her house. I have no idea what to do. I can help with that. My kid is applying for college. I can help my clients with the FAFSA because I do their taxes. Virtually every big financial decision has tax implications. If a broker is telling clients, whether it's a life insurance broker or a stockbroker is telling clients, I'm doing financial planning, but I am not giving you any tax advice, then the client is being cheated. And we do not cheat our clients. We can answer those questions. We can tie everything together. And my clients become, in a very nice way, dependent upon me in so many more ways than just, you know, managing their investments in or doing their tax return. Because when they come into my office, they can talk about all of their financial things, and that includes some of the family stuff. And I don't know if other programs do that. And I've worked with coached some people who have been Garrett planners who come to ACA, and they tell me that it with Garrett, everything was hourly. They were taught to do hourly, and they would have a short-term relationship with somebody, and we develop long-term relationships with people, which means we don't have to resell our client list every year. We don't have to go and sign up a bunch of new people every year just to collect our fees. If we are using the ACA model and taking clients now, and then we have a way to keep doing work for them, and they keep signing up, my nut is always made every year. And I think that's a pretty big distinction, too. Did that help? Was that responsive to your question, Cecilia?
Did we lose Cecilia?
Hi, sorry. I just went through its whole booth. I think I lost you guys for just a second there. So that's very helpful, and Garrett was one of the names I was trying to
yeah.
So that's very helpful. Thank you.
And I'll be honest, Garrett is for some people. You know, there are people for whom that is the way they would prefer to do their work, and I would never belittle that. It's not the way how I wanted to do my work, though.
Because their Garrett's model is so different from ACA's, it's very hard to compare. So if you were to look deeper into Garrett, and like Ted said, they are hourly, it's my understanding that they don't develop the client relationship fully the way that the ACA model does. Would you say that to be true, Ted, Judy?
Well, I know that Garrett, I know you can, much like ACA, you can take aspects of the program and kind of, tailor them to your own preferences. But near me, the Garrett planning, like they'll create, there's a couple folks near me that create a financial plan, and they'll charge, you know, they may charge a lot less for that than I'm quoting through an ACA system. And then they do an assets under management ongoing fee. So it's the ongoing part, at least the ones local, you know, that I've talked to, their ongoing work is really the investments as opposed to more of the, like, the insurance reviews, the tax planning, and a lot of the other things that we also incorporate in it. So I actually refer, when I have people who have certain situations, so for example, since I've been screening out these kinds of people that I don't think I can, you know, that fit what I want to be working with, I actually suggest for some of them that an hour or two with a Garrett planner could be what they need. I just don't want to work hourly. I tried it and I didn't like it. Somebody asked me, would you please consider it? So I did, and I hated it because I felt like I was giving away so much knowledge for just a short period of time, that there's so many pieces that, you know, they're asking you these questions and you're answering those specific questions when really there's all these other issues that you don't know about and they don't realize could be dramatically different if you had that information. So, you know, but that was why I think it does work though for some folks, and I'm glad the Garrett system is there because it gives me a place to refer some people to.
This is Chris. Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, sorry. I'm from the Ohio area, and have you had any experience with the Sestina, John Sestina Network, and how does that compare? Does anyone know?
What is the name of it?
John Sestina.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't either.
It's another, like a network, kind of like Garrett, I suppose, or ACA. But his website, you know, says he's a pioneer, much like he mentions ACA and Garrett on his website as well. So I was just wondering what the differences might be there, if anybody had an idea.
Yeah, sorry, I haven't heard of that one.
I haven't either. I'm going to make a note of it, Chris, and see what I can find out.
He's a NAPFA advisor. He's a NAPFA advisor and pretty well known. And I've heard his name come up. And I actually have heard some comment about the distinction, but since I don't have any personal experience, I think it would be inappropriate for me to, it's almost like I'd be rumor mongering.
I think it's important, though, and maybe Judy and Ted, you can talk a little bit more about this, because ACA is a lot more than just a network of people. It's a belief, and it's based off of a system that everybody is taught, and they learn the system, and yeah, like Judy said, it can be tailored to your needs or individual practices, but the long and short of it is ACA has this system that works. Can one of you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because I think it's important that you all understand it's not just a network. Yes, there's a great membership of people, and it's a great association, but it's much more than a network.
That's more of an interest to me.
I'll take a stab at it. The training, there's a methodology and a process and a set of tools that go with it that get you pretty much through any kind of financial situation that could come up. And what's really nice is that as you're doing it and as you're working through the steps with clients, I think it was Doug maybe was asking about the value add piece. It's a continual thing. So the more you do it, the more you see the opportunities to help them, you know, help your clients kind of get more for their money just in their overall finances. So there's a less of a, I think other ways of looking at it really focus heavily on the investment piece, and there's a lot of money-saving opportunities and therefore wealth-building opportunities to be had by being smart about tax planning and other steps that affect people's finances. So the process that ACA has and the way you go through it, you see those, and it makes it easy to justify your cost, I think. And at least it's made it easy for me to justify my cost and show the value on an ongoing basis. The other piece, I think, is that the process, the way you're implementing and stuff, is it's let me be proactive. So when I see changes in tax codes coming, for example, I know which of my clients could benefit from those, and that's something that they really appreciate, that they've got that contact. And that, I think, is quite a bit different from other ways of doing things. And so I think that's part of the whole ACA process, is you can anticipate things before people realize the need is there, and that's worth a lot. Did that help, Kim?
Yeah, I think that helped. Does that help?
You know, I almost feel like I can't answer that question very well because I've been doing it this way. I don't have perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I do a fair amount of work with our newer members. I do some mentoring and looking at the excitement in their eyes tells me I'm still in the right place. And, So the learning piece of it, the integrating of these major parts of my client's financial life, without just having to focus on one thing or being stuck focusing on one thing, is why they keep coming back. And why do I keep coming back? The only conference I make any real effort to go to every year is ours, because the people that I went to class with 11 years ago and who I've gotten to know along the way in ACA are among my best friends in the world. So we're going to be in Kansas City in September, and I already know that I'll walk into the opening reception and I will feel like I'm home. And that, you know, Judy talked a little bit about some of the technical part of that. but there's an awful lot of moral support too. And when I feel like I'm failing, you know, I'm not charging enough, or I'm not signing enough clients, or even when I have a success, you know, like Judy is a web, an internet star now, and we can all share that. And it really is it's a powerful relationship that I feel like if I say too much about it, it sounds like I'm trying to oversell it. But it's an awful lot like the relationships that I formed with people I went to college with. It was an important time in my life, and we were on a similar path at that time. And I have those kinds of relationships with ACA members, and you know, I got to know Judy a lot in the last year. And you know, if it feels like even if I don't talk to her for a year, it doesn't matter. We're still really good friends. And if I have a problem, I can call her. And I don't know if the other networks promote that sort of a relationship.
Yeah, I would add to that, what's really nice is the organization encourages you to be involved. So it's kind of, it's run by members for members. And I don't know how the other organizations you're thinking of are set up, but it's one of the things that really helped me a lot was after I went through training, I signed up to be in a very, very minor way on some committee and got to know a couple people and then felt like I could ask them when I had a certain kind of issue. You're also assigned a mentor, and but there's a lot of effort made to make you be successful. There's a lot of follow-up from your training, and you tend to have a really tight connection with your training class. And then you start to meet people who have different ideas about their practices that are maybe, you know, compatible with yours, and you form study groups. So I have an accountability group that I'm in with four different people, and we're all very different, and we're in different states and different locations, and we actually have a monthly call and can share issues and help each other build practices and kind of really, really help each other stay on track with what we've said we want to do. And I know that within ACA there are bunches of those, and then you can have you can hire someone to facilitate if you want. I mean, ours doesn't right now, but there's a lot of support there, and it's easy to be involved, and the more you get involved, then the more you get out of it.
On a different subject, Cecilia again, I should probably know this, but so do ACA members actually manage investments?
A lot do. It varies from practice to practice. I don't know what you do, Ted. I don't do AUM. I have LPOAs for quite a few of my clients who want me to actually make the trades for them. And do the transactions, but I don't technically manage.
Would you mind explaining what the difference is between those two? I'm not familiar with either of those terms.
Okay, so one way would be where the way I do it is I have my clients open retail accounts mostly at Schwab and then a bunch at Fidelity. The ones I have that I have them put all their money at Fidelity have a 401k there. It's just easiest for them. But so their money is in a retail account and rather than an institutional account. But I get a limited power of attorney from them to actually make the investments and do the rebalancing. But I have to let them know when I'm doing it and we agree on it. And it's the primary reason for doing it that way is to make sure it actually happens rather than sending them home with homework and then it never gets done. So I'm not managing those investments. If I had an institutional account, say with Schwab, then I would have everybody bringing their investments to one, you know, one institution, say Schwab, and I would be fully managing them. So some people within ACA do that. Some do what I do, and then there's kind of everything in between. And that's
we don't set a requirement that you have to do that. We don't, for instance, in the class, teach or espouse that there's one way, the one best way to manage or to help do a client's investments. And there are some advisors who are very involved, who came maybe from a brokerage background, and they're comfortable with that, and they like it, and it's where they think they add the most value. And then there are others of us who, like Judy and I, have lifestyle practices. I have some part-time staffing, but I don't have anybody sitting here who can do trades all the time. So I've hired another advisor who has staff to do my trades and run things through her Ameritrade account. So you've heard two widely disparate ways to do it, and that's our way of encouraging people to find their own level. Some of our advisors want to have large, very busy, lots of client practices where they provide all that service. And there are others among us who have who don't want to be paperwork heavy or trade heavy, if you will. And you are encouraged to, and you can talk to other people to find out how different styles work.
And I think the same is true with other aspects of financial planning. For example, Ted's an attorney. I'm not. I have an estate planning review meeting with my clients, and then I send them off to see an estate attorney. And I have a list of ones that I think are awesome, and they can choose whichever one they want. And taxes is another area that a lot of ACA, most ACA advisors do the actual tax returns for clients. But some don't. Some farm them out. You know, some recommend a local CPA. So there's flexibility in the system that you can kind of pick and choose a bit to do what you enjoy the most or where you feel your skill sets are best. And there are people with different, coming from different backgrounds who choose different ways of building their practice based on those things.
This is Doug again. Can I jump in for a second? I did read the book. I like the book very much. By the way, there's another book that just came out called The Answer that I'd recommend people. It's an easy read and it's good.
Doug, what's the book?
It's called The Answer. It was just written by a Wall Street guy who basically had 60 days to live or something, and he kind of expounded on.
He finally confessed, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. He was kind of a come to Jesus meeting, right? What he did was it kind of pretty much affirmed the concept of fee based, and that there's a lot of excess fees and people aren't getting the values, and you know, but it's very much a testimonial that kind of for those of us who kind of believe in the fee based model. Even though I'm not into it yet, I think you guys, and it's a very easy read. It was highly promoted about a month ago. But anyway, what reading the book, the Financial Dysfunction book, it kind of made sense to me. It seemed like his investment advisory model, and you know, I have an MBA in finance and I'm a CPA, but this made sense to me that doing the bond ladder for the first 10 or 15 years out, and then doing the kind of a large cap, you know, top 10 or 20 stocks there, and then managing that yourself, or based on, it sounds like what ACL might advise as being what those top 20 large cap investments ought to be, and then kind of made sense then to use, it's recommended, a investment advisor for small cap and international, because I think the author made the argument that there were some good arguments as to why, you know, having an investment advisor doing that. I mean, I guess what I'm asking is that model kind of, you know, resonated pretty well to me. That sounded a little different than the way both of you described the way that you were managing investments. Did I get that wrong, or?
I do bond ladders for clients nearing retirement. I use exchange traded funds for the portfolios that I build for clients, and so I don't do any active management. I don't choose any advisors on that. I actually use the exchange traded funds for all the different asset classes. So I believe in passive investing. And there are people in ACA who believe in active and some passive. And so that is a mixture, and you can choose what works best for you.
Does the bond ladder work very well with the low interest rates so low, like, you know, now?
I mean, you got to pay attention to why you're using a bond ladder in the first place. And what Bert talks about is using the bond ladder as your cash flow. However many years out you build your ladder. Bond ladders don't work for people who are chasing yield.
Or very young too, I guess. Right?
Or very young. Unless there might be some other circumstances where that makes some sense. If they're putting a big chunk of money into a high risk investment, then let's take some other money and, you know, put it over here so you can't get at it the same way. So yes, it can still work in this interest environment if you're looking at your motive.
Okay.
Hi, this is Harlan. I'm wondering if anybody in the network at all is using dimensional fund advisors, if you're familiar with them.
And
how they're using it, if they use it by developing the relationship directly, or if they do it through a turnkey asset manager provider?
Both. I know there are some folks that are using the TAMP, the turnkey asset management providers. There's one in the Bay Area, I forget. Loring Ward is one I know some folks use. But most advisors are using them, I think, through like TD Ameritrade or something like that. And we actually have an ACA DFA users group.
Okay.
Really? I went to one of their conferences last year. Completely sold me on the whole.
Yeah, I agree. DFA. I went to one as well, and I the issue for me it was I didn't want to do the institutional investing. You have to be
They won't look at you unless you have at least $10 million or something to invest.
Yeah, and there's just different things that start to happen then too.
Yeah.
But you can also go with SSG, Shareholder Services Group down in San Diego. They don't have a $10 million. They don't have that criteria, and so I know a lot of ACA advisors use dimensional fund advisors by using SSG as their clear, you know, their brokerage, their custodian.
Thank you.
Anyone using IFA, which is dimensional,
I personally have my fund. I have my funds invested with IFA, personally.
The ETFs that I use, I actually just mapped the IFA portfolios, and so I believe in that philosophy strongly. So I have taken those different assets and just mapped them into exchange traded funds. So it would be nice to do the DFA. There's all the other regulatory requirements that didn't seem like I wanted to do. So I've heard. I think IFA and DFA are both great.
Yeah. Oh, well, IFA just invests in DFA.
They're kind of, they have an interesting, the book, what's it called? It's like 12-step recovery index fund.
Yeah. Ken Huebner.
Yeah.
But you can access DFA through, what you said, the Turnkey Asset Advisors?
Turnkey Asset
they're,
Management
Yeah, they're
Advisors.
Called TAMP.
TAMP, yeah. DFA has a list of those that they can, you can talk to them and they'll get you in touch with. The problem for me with that was that there's a fee that they need to charge, obviously. And so I couldn't reconcile that with trying to really be fee only.
Yeah. Well, yeah, not to have any, you don't want to do any assets under management, right? Is that where you're coming
right.
from?
Right, right. But that might make sense for you. There's some folks I know that do that in ACA.
Right. You know, what has always been kind of a puzzlement for me was the idea that an advisor that can charge an asset under management can take that fee out of tax-deferred dollars as opposed to the ACA way, which is, you know, seemingly to the client going to appear to be a lot of it, a larger expense.
That's a good
there
point.
There are quite a few ACA advisors who take a portion of their fee out of tax-deferred accounts by doing just by doing that. That's not hard to set up.
It's not. Okay.
No.
Because I would see that as a real detriment when comparing one versus the other.
I've got about 5 more minutes. If you want to think about any final questions that you have, please speak up.
A quick question. How is it important for someone to get their certified financial planner designation? Do you guys have it?
Yes, I do.
It's a requirement. It's a requirement to be a full member of ACA.
And how?
I'm waiting to hear.
Okay. And so how do you? I know that there's the experience. One of the 4 E's is experience in 3 full-time years. So as an ACA member, are you gaining that experience then to become a full-fledged CFP?
Absolutely. Okay. In the best possible way, I think, humbly.
And that's one of the things, Cecilia, that your mentor could help with, because it's my understanding once you've met the 3 years, the CFP board will then likely want another CFP to sign off that you've really been working as a planner. So once you have your RIA and your CFP, once you have your RIA, you can instantly start getting clients and then working towards your experience. And ACA has that mentorship that can help. Plus, don't forget all the other relationships that you establish with other members can also help. I think, Harlan, that was one of the questions you asked yesterday about, too, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I did my 3 year. I mean, I just got my CFP after 3 years of being in ACA and doing the work, and I had another advisor sign off on my experience because I had the education and I passed the exam, but I needed to get the experience.
Well, I want to go ahead and thank Judy and Ted both and all of you for attending. Thank you. Thank you for your questions. To all of you, if you have any questions, any further questions, if anything comes up, please let me know. If I don't know the answer, I certainly will find answers for you. And don't forget to take a look at our website because it really does have all of the information you need that can give you better insight into what ACA is all about. And again, thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.